Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everybody. Tonight's episode number 166 is a repeat encore performance. That means the phone lines are closed. We are not live, so don't call in because there's nobody here to answer the phone. We are going to be back next week with a new live show. So until then, enjoy a repeat performance of our interview with Carlisle Toms.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Voice of Indie podcast. I'm your host, Beam Weeks, and this is show number 134. And with me is Mr. Stephen Gies. How are you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing fine. It's been beautiful weather here. Everything's in bloom. I like this time of year.
Yeah. So, 134 episodes. Wow. I mean, we are building up quite an archive there. Now, you're talking nice weather. We're in the middle of a ice storm right now. It's been raining and freezing rain all day long, and it's supposed to start snowing here before too long. And this is February in Michigan, not February in Alabama.
Yeah. So we've got a new book out. This is the second edition, originally published in 2012, the second edition of Outshine, an Ovarian Cancer Memoir by Karen Ingalls. And it's in pre-sale now. She's got a couple of big events coming up in the next couple of weeks. So we're excited about that. She uses the proceeds from this book to help fund cancer research. That's Outshine, an Ovarian Cancer Memoir by Karen Ingalls, second edition.
Yeah, and also, is this is still in pre-order redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision. It's still in pre-order, but you can, if you order it from Amazon, you'll get it. This is by Gwen M. Plano. She was our guest last week. This is a family psychological thriller, mystery, and with some Christian elements in it. And get out there and get your copy. Gwen is an exceptional writer. And listeners, if you want to join tonight's show and you want to participate, you want to call or throw a comment out on Twitter, here's how you do that.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest. Or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right. We've got another book in pre-sale right now, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms, who happens to be tonight's guest. The Calling Dream, this was originally published many years ago, and he's completely updated it, revised it, beefed it up, added some bedazzling, some sparkles, a little bit of flashing lights, and we've got a new edition out, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms, and we'll be talking about that tonight.
Yeah, also out right now is the fourth installment of the Mac McDowell Mission series by Robert G. Willescroft. This is Operation Whiteout. It is available. Get over and get it. Grab a copy. These are some excellent books. These are high adventure, and if you like military thrillers and Cold War thrillers, this is right up your alley. So get over to Amazon or wherever you buy your books and grab a copy in hardcover, in soft cover, in ebook. It's all out there. So get over there. Steven?
I just dropped my screen here, pulling it back up.
Ah.
All right. Food Truck Tennessee by A.K. Wingler. She was going to be our guest next week, but she's had to rearrange some stuff in her schedule, so we're going to put her off about a month or two. But How to Start and Run Your Own Food Truck Business in Tennessee by A.K. Wingler is out there now and selling very well.
Yeah. Also out there, another how-to book is How to Teach Driving, the Parents Edition and the Instructors Edition by Lindquist. What's his first
Kenneth
name?
Lindquist.
I'm for whatever reason, I'm thinking Harold, and it's like, I know it's not Harold. Kenneth Lindquist. Harold's his brother. Kenneth Lindquist. And he's also got a website, howtoteachdriving.com, I believe it is. So get over there and check that out. And these books are cool. They if you've got a teenager that you want to teach how to drive before they take driver's education, these books are perfect for that. If you want to become a driving instructor, that's what the instructor's edition is for. So go find that over there on Amazon or wherever you buy books. Also, if you want to know about these books or other books that are coming out, you want to know all things Fresh Ink Group, we have a newsletter, and we would like to invite you to subscribe to said newsletter. And here's how you can go about doing that.
Stay on top of these podcasts and all things Fresh Ink Group with our weekly digital newsletter, new releases, videos, stories, excerpts, interviews, and more. Sign up now on the homepage of freshinkgroup.com and be the one who knows what's what.
What?
Right. Yeah. So let's take a look at what's happening with the print sales at Fresh Ink Group this week. We've only got 3 books in the top 5 because hardcovers are selling like softcovers. Interesting, when I put this together a couple of days ago, the top 2 slots were held by 1 book, but that has been knocked out of its slot as of half hour ago. So let's start with the list. Number 1 and number 2, with only 1 copy difference between the hardcover and the softcover sales, is Redemption, A Father's Fatal Decision by Gwen M. Plano, up until about a half hour ago. Through most of the week, the middle slot, number 3, was held by Submariner by Jerry Pate. And that has now jumped up to the number 1 slot and pushed Redemption down into the number 2 and 3 slots. So, as of right now, Submariner is in number 1, Redemption number 2, Redemption number 3. And then in the 4 and 5 slots, selling precisely the same number of hardcovers as softcovers, is The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. That's tonight's guest. That's one of the books we'll be talking about tonight, and it's in the number 4 and 5 slots this week. Also, we've got a noteworthy thing. Outshine, an ovarian cancer memoir, hit Amazon number 1 bestseller status this week for about 4 or 5 days there. So congratulations, Karen Ingalls. You've got a number 1 Amazon bestseller.
Congratulations to Karen. Yeah, listeners, here's something interesting. We do audiobooks. We produce them. We sell them. And did you know we've got an audiobook page at freshinkgroup.com? Go over to freshinkgroup.com and click on the audiobooks page, and you'll see all the audiobooks that we currently offer. And we're going to have another one added to it before too long, Whiteout, Operation Whiteout by Robert G. Willis-Croft. That's nearly finished. I've got another week or so worth of stuff to do on it, and that'll be done. So keep an eye out for that. And if you've ever missed an episode, you got a favorite episode, you just tuning in for the first time and you want to see what this show is all about, dig into our archives. We've got a whole bunch of episodes, as I said at the start of this one. This is number 134, and we got a whole pile of them sitting over here on these archives, and here's how you can find those.
Find your favorite show in the Voice of Indy archives on YouTube at Fresh Ink Group, StephenGees.com, BeamWeeks.com, FreshInkGroup.com, and on Spotify. And now, you can listen on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn. Just search The Voice of Indy, all one word.
Yeah, all right. So
let's play a commercial before we introduce today's guest.
All righty. This is going to be the updated Outshine commercial.
When Karen Ingalls was diagnosed with stage 2C ovarian cancer, she realized how little she knew about what was once called the silent killer. As Ingalls began to educate herself, she felt overwhelmed by the prevalent negativity of cancer. Lost in the information about drugs, side effects, and statistics, Ingalls redirected her energy to focus on the equally overwhelming blessings of life, learning to rejoice in each day and find peace in spirituality. In this memoir, Karen is a calming presence and positive companion, offering a refreshing perspective of hope with the knowledge that the beauty of the soul, the real me, and the real you outshines the effects of cancer, chemotherapy, and radiation. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in jacketed hardcover, softcover, and all ebook editions, the new second edition of Outshine, an Ovarian Cancer Memoir, is a story of survival. A reminder that disease is not an absolute, but a challenge to overcome.
All right. A reminder
video for that.
It's available. Yeah. All right. So let's introduce tonight's guest. Carlisle Towns is a writer who grew up in rural Ozarks poverty. He completed his master's degree in 1981. He has written for different different regional magazines and newspapers over the years, and has often been selected to speak at both professional and non-professional events, as well as radio talk shows. However, he had never published fiction until completing his first novel in 2014. His general method for fiction has been to define a character and allow that character to tell his or her own story from first-person perspective, as though the character is writing an autobiography. Through his characters, he explores the psychology of the human condition as well as the various elements and entanglements of personality. His novels incorporate the social and historical influences surrounding the lifetimes of his characters and are stories of overcoming social, emotional, and spiritual challenges. And with that, welcome to the show, Carlisle Towns.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here again.
Yeah, again. Cool. Now, the last time you were here, you were still working. I understand you've retired since then?
Yeah, I quit my day job so I can just devote myself to writing and promoting my writing and doing all of that stuff to try to make this what I call my retirement career.
Cool.
Hmm. So are you in Texas now or are you still in the Ozarks?
No, I'm in Texas. I've been in Texas for almost 8 years.
Well, you know what the weather's like where we are. What about where you are?
It was 89 degrees today.
Oh, okay.
Come on now. Don't brag.
over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhose saying it was a beautiful day here in the armpit of Florida. The wife is home and all is good here in our little home. And Joe Congel says, hello, Voice of Indie enthusiasts. Looking forward to Carlisle Tombs tonight. Yes, we had a typo on the newsletter instead of Tom's. And Jill Mayer, 7 degrees and snowing in Denver. Boy, what a difference.
7 degrees. Wow. That's, you know, we're doing this show and you got people from all over in different parts of the country, and it's amazing how different the weather is. We've got ice and snow, they've got 7 degrees, and Carlisle's got 89.
Mm-hmm.
And down in Alabama, the flowers are blooming.
Yeah, there's some blooming something or others down here.
So, Carlisle, tell us a little bit about your childhood. Were you a reader, writer back in the early days? Is that what, you know, how you started enjoying reading and writing?
Well, I had actually been inspired by my father's book. It's a long story, but my dad was a prisoner of war in Japan in World War II. He was captured a few days after Pearl Harbor and Guam, and then spent the entire duration of World War II as a Japanese POW. And then he and a friend of his narrated their story to a fellow by the name of Stephen Merrick. And it was actually the first book that was ever published regarding Japanese POWs, published in 1954. Well, my mother died when I was 5 years old, and I had that book, and that was my link to my dad, because I didn't meet my dad until I was 18, but I had that book, and I knew that my dad had told this story, and that was one of my first inspirations. And then in the sixth grade, I got to play Bob Cratchit in Scrooge, and after that, I decided I wanted to be a playwright. So I wrote my first play in the sixth grade. It was an environmental ditty called "Who Ate the Tree." I have no idea whatever happened to it.
Who ate the tree? So what was that about?
I can't remember exactly what it was about. I just remember writing it, and somewhere over the years, it disappeared. I'm sure it was superb writing in the sixth grade. But that's kind of where I started, and then, I wrote poetry and short stories and that kind of thing all through high school, and then in college, I was the editor for the college literary magazine that was published once each semester with student submissions of poetry and short stories and that sort of thing. So I've been at it a long time. I just had never done a novel.
What did you find different about doing a novel?
Well, I had tried for years and years and years to write novels, and I had ideas. I still have some of those ideas that I had back in the 1990s, to that when I was living in Nashville. Then I had ideas for novels at that time, but I was trying to write them in third person, and I could get four, maybe five chapters in, and it would just stop. I couldn't do it. And then I sort of discovered by accident the style that I use now, where I allow the protagonist to just tell his or her story. And when I do that, it just seems to work. And I've gotten through two novels, halfway through the third at this point.
So what sort of education do you have? College, just high school? Obviously, I believe we've spoken about this before. There's some college in there and whatnot,
yeah.
But
bachelor's degree at Lyon. I got a bachelor's degree at Lyon College in Batesville, Arkansas, and then got my master's at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock in 1981.
Slacker.
And so I just finished a 43-year career with my master's degree. Stuck it out.
What were you doing for 43 years?
I was a mental health social worker.
Where?
Okay.
Well, in various places. I was worked for the Addictions Treatment Unit for Baptist Hospital in Nashville. I worked for Arkansas State Hospital, Tennessee State Hospital. I was in private practice for 7 years. I worked for Ozarks Medical Center, and I also worked for the VA.
Now, does your work history, does any of that ever inspire or influence your writing and fiction?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I would absolutely under no circumstances ever write anything about anyone that I've ever had in therapy. I would just simply never, ever do that. But what I do is the stories are created and they just come from people who are struggling. It's like in The Calling Dream, this is a televangelist who is struggling with sexual addiction and his conflicts between his religious beliefs and the fact that he can't seem to control himself. And so he's around seducing all of these women and fighting with himself over that whole issue because of how he was raised. In Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch, then this is a relationship with this girl who's mother is extremely controlling and her father is an alcoholic, and she grows up rebelling against her mother and trying to protect her father. And then when she gets away, goes to college and gets out of the house, then she begins to discover things are not what she always thought, and that maybe her own family is not what she always thought. So yeah, it's connected, and I'm an advocate for the addictions recovery program, and an advocate for trauma survivors and mental health, people with mental health issues. I'm an advocate for that, and I'm also an advocate for the LGBTQ community, and just people who are marginalized. That's one of the things that I want to, maybe is my target audience, it would be people who are marginalized. I've said that what I want to do is to teach people who've never experienced trauma and marginalization that people who do experience are human beings as well, and teach people who have experienced marginalization and trauma that they can heal. And I kind of do that through fiction versus writing self-help kind of stuff, because the characters go through the process of healing.
Okay. I'm going to try to get some more people to tune in. I'm going to share this link, as we had a bad link sent out this morning. So, Stephen, you can take the next question, and I will get this sent out.
Why don't you go ahead and roll a commercial?
I can do that.
Yeah, hit Story Empire and Food Truck.
Hey, writers, readers, bloggers, poets, editors, journalists, book marketers, you need to check out the free resource at storyempire.com. Yes, Story Empire is a dozen industry experts posting free how-to advice, tips, insider secrets, and more 3 times a week. Read the ones that fit you and share the rest with your writer friends. That's storyempire.com. It's free, so subscribe now.
With good jobs so hard to find, especially in rapidly expanding Tennessee, owning your own food truck could be the best option. It's the least expensive startup, and you can be fully operational in mere months. The rules and regulations can be a bit complex, and no single source has offered all the answers. Until now. How to start and run your own food truck business in Tennessee by food truck veteran A.K. Wheeler is the step-by-step guide that takes you from good idea to great success. Sure, it's hard work, but exciting, mobile, flexible, and highly profitable. And you get to be your own boss and set your own hours. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group, this book tells you how and where to make money in this exploding independent industry. Learn more at Wingler's website, yourfoodtruckhowto.com. Grab your copy in laminated hardcover, glossy softcover, or any of the major ebook formats at retailers worldwide. Even if you're just curious for now, this guide is the best way to discover why a food truck business is right for you.
All right. Food trucks. They're a happening thing these days. We've got a caller. You want to take a caller? No, actually, we've got some Twitter stuff here. We'll do the Twitter thing first. Stephen, you want to take Twitter?
I'm hearing 3 different.
Huh? All right. I think he's having some problems over there.
Hearing the podcast 3 times.
You're hearing the
That's
podcast
strange.
3 times. Well,
yes.
I'm only hearing
it
once.
Stopped.
You got it opened up on another page?
Nope.
All right. All right. Well, I will go ahead and take these questions, because it's the same question from Robert G. Williscroft and Joe Conjo. And Robert says, are you a plotter or a pantser? And Joe Conjo says, hi, Carlisle. After reading your bio and seeing that you let the characters tell the story, it begs me to ask if you are more of a pantser than a plotter. So do you outline these stories, or do you just sit down and start writing?
What I do is I sit down and start writing. It's almost like channeling. And so far that's worked, where I just allow them to tell the story. Now, what I do is when I finish a chapter, I go back through that chapter and review it and see maybe this could be said differently, or maybe I just need to take that out. I have had the experience where I'd write two or three chapters back up, take those chapters out, and start again. But the characters seem to know their story, and they seem to know the sequence of it, and it just seems to flow together. So I don't outline, but I'll have a story in my head for years. I've got stories in my head that is probably going to take me two or three years before I can actually get them into text.
Yeah, there, you know, there's Rob and Joan Carter, their podcast on before this one, and they had a guest on tonight that was talking about a pantser sits down and starts just writing the story and getting rid of the first three chapters, you know, and then starting from there. And it seemed to work for her because I guess she got her book published after that. So lots to be said for that, I guess, in some ways. You guys want to take this phone call?
You go for it.
All right. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You are on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Claire from Savannah.
Hi, Claire. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Do you have a question or a comment for Carlisle?
Oh, yeah. I was wondering how growing up in the South influenced the character and quality of your writing.
Well, I think this book in particular is, in many ways, is my story, because I visualized the farm that I grew up on as I wrote the story. This is a kid from the backwoods of Arkansas. I was a kid from the backwoods of Arkansas. This is a kid who grew up, you know, I grew up with barely electric, and you had to screw the light bulb into the ceiling to turn it on or off and unscrew it. There was no switch. Various other kinds of things that I grew up with, no running water, going out behind the smokehouse because we didn't have an outhouse. And so
that's old school.
This kid, old school, this kid in the story grows up very much in that same way that I grew up, and with the same kind of influences. I had a very, very close, loving relationship with my grandmother, and the character in the story has a close, loving relationship with his mother. And his father is abusive. And so I had that experience as a child as well, where I was abused by the men and a couple of men in the family. And so in many ways, this is my story. But fortunately, I was never a sex addict, thank goodness. But I did struggle with growing up in a fundamentalist church and with being gay. I struggled with that. And so there are a lot of similarities here, and definitely a lot of influences. You write what you know, and that's what I've done.
Say that,
well, you've done it.
Go ahead, Claire.
Sorry, I was just going to say that he's done it very well.
Yes, no doubt.
And I was going to ask, you know, would you say that your story here is kind of somewhat semi-autobiographical?
Semi, yes. I've noticed that more and more. I don't think I initially realized that, but I've noticed it more and more. I mean, I did draw up on my childhood. The protagonist is a heterosexual, and he seduces women and fights with himself over the conflicts between his fundamentalist upbringing and what he's doing. Cheats on his wife. He hides it from the church. He hides it from his TV audience. He pretends to be one thing when he's really another. And, you know, I grew up gay in the Ozarks in the 1960s. I was 14 years old when Stonewall happened. And I grew up pretending. Like a lot of people who are gay do, they grow up pretending that they're straight. They grow up pretending that they're something else. I grew up doing that. So I think what I did is I sort of compared the two in that respect, compared that experience.
Okay.
But the dreams haunt him from childhood. The dreams, the redheaded woman seduces him. She calls him to be a televangelist. She becomes his nightmare eventually. And until he can discern what it is she's trying to tell him, he's not going to have peace.
So did the people at the fundamentalist church know that you were gay at that point? Were you out when you were young?
No. I was not.
No. Okay.
No. You're in the backwoods of Arkansas. The largest city in our county was 2,000 people. And
wow.
So, you know, and back in the 1960s, you know, this is referenced in the book as well. The preacher who baptized me did a sermon in which he said the sin of homosexuality is worse than the sin of murder.
Wow.
And so I'm certainly not going to talk about that if they think that I'm worse than a murderer. I might consider suicide. Kind of been there, done that on that whole trauma issue that I treated for 43 years. Been there, done that. And and if I tell anybody, would they want to kill me? Would it be like a Matthew Shepard kind of thing? So no, absolutely not. I never told a soul until I was well into my adult years.
Could you see somebody else who had come out or had, you know, suffered from the backlash from the community?
No, never. As far as I knew, I was the only one.
I bet you weren't.
I bet I wasn't either, but, you know, there was one guy that I knew in college who I found out he was gay long after we graduated. But, yeah, it's a similar struggle. Because it's a struggle between the concept of sin and how human beings really are.
Yeah, human beings are complicated. There's no, well, this is what you are, and it's the, you know, prototype of being the human. I mean, people are complicated. That's what makes us unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I've been, my grandparents were from Mark Tree, Arkansas, way up in the hills. And I remember I visited there before, and it was kind of, you know, backwoodsy and rednecky, and, you know, it was a different world, completely a different world from what I was used to.
Mark Tree is not far from where I placed the protagonist. I have him growing up in Raven Den and Pocahontas and Jonesboro are the nearest cities. And so Mark Tree is not far from Jonesboro. That's all in that same region there on the east side of Arkansas. We're near the Mississippi River. It's where, along where Raven Den is, that's where the Ozarks hit mountains become hills, and they flow down into the Arkansas Delta. And the Delta is down around West Memphis, and, you know, that's rice-growing country and down there, cotton-growing country. Primarily, I think a lot of, Riceland Rice is out of Arkansas, and they were headquartered initially in Jonesboro, and they produce a third of all the rice consumed in the United States.
Wow. That's a lot of rice.
That's a lot of rice.
Now, Claire has dropped off, so thank you for calling in, Claire, if you're still
listening.
Thanks, Claire. I appreciate that.
And you can call back if you got another question.
Yeah, you can call back. You didn't have to hang up, but yeah. Over on Twitter, Joe Conjo, he's got another question for you. He says, hi, Carlisle. Do you think you will ever write genre fiction and maybe write a series?
Write a what?
Write a series, you know, like Harry Potter is a series, you know, a series of books that cover the same story or same characters, but in different stories.
The first part is category fiction, you know, like a science fiction or romance or something like that.
Yeah, I do have ideas. I have an idea for a horror film, and I have had ideas for sci-fi, but I don't think I know, especially sci-fi, and as fast as technology is moving, I couldn't keep up with it. I would have to write a sci-fi from the 1950s and kind of hope that it took the mark.
Yeah.
I've got ideas for those kinds of things, but, you know, the Harry Potter thing is sort of like it took those children through the progress as they grew up and that sort of thing. J.K. Rowling was just absolutely brilliant to do that. You know, what I do is that each one of my novels introduces a character that will become a protagonist of one of the other novels.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
So it's not the same characters, and each novel stands on its own, but each novel will introduce a character that will be a protagonist of one of the other novels.
Hmm. That cuts down on having to lurk around street corners trying to hustle up some bootleg character purchases.
Yeah, it just it kind of works that way. Actually, the character Ronald Dennison, the pastor in this book, was introduced in the Confessions from the Pumpkin Patch because LaBella, who was the protagonist of that story, had a tryst with him. And that actually, that tryst that she had with him, I initially called it the Soul Encounters, because it would be an encounter with someone that would change their lives. And so in that particular scene, which is actually in both books, it's in her book from her perspective of what that experience was, and it's in his book from his perspective of what that experience was, but it's one of those turning point experiences. And I think, you know, a lot of times people have those turning point experiences. It might be somebody that you meet at a party and you have a conversation, and out of that conversation you go, oh man, you know what? And it gives you an awareness that maybe you didn't have before. Or it could be something more complex. It could be a relationship that lasts for a brief time, for a few weeks or that kind of thing. And after that relationship, you're not the same. So that's kind of the idea behind this, is that these characters who are introduced to be protagonists of another novel are then life-changing for both the people who have that encounter with one another.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, science fiction, one of the big turning points in science fiction 40, 50 years ago was the social aspects of it. Not just what is technology and how is that going to change how we live, but how are all the social aspects changing too? Acceptance of homosexuality or alternate relationship styles and things like that. And some writers like Robert A. Heinlein really, really thoroughly explored that kind of stuff. And, you know, if you want to write about that kind of stuff, you're certainly on the nexus. You, in your lifetime, you've gone from, you know, being found out would have been a horrible thing. Like when I was 12 years old, a guy I knew at school got outed and went home and hanged himself because he couldn't find a way to live with being a 12-year-old who'd been outed. And, you know, when you look at what's happened over our lifetime from that to, you have a husband now. You've seen the changes. You've seen and felt the changes and the ramifications of those changes. That'd be an interesting thing to incorporate into a story.
Yeah. And, well, actually, the soul encounter that occurs, one of the soul encounters that occurs in this book is an encounter with a transgender child and whose mother was murdered. And that child then becomes the protagonist of the next novel, the third novel that I'm currently working on.
Yeah, we've heard about your system.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing
and,
with...
You know, in terms of technology... My grandmother in 1995, she was like 86 years old and 85 years old and somewhere in there. And she told me a story that when she was a little girl, and this would have been around the 1919s, somewhere in there, that she was in the yard playing, and this is in the backwoods of Arkansas. She was in the yard playing and a plane flew over. And when the plane flew over, she had never heard of nor ever seen an airplane, and it terrified her. She went running into the house because she was terrified of the plane. It would have had to have been less than 20 years after the invention of the airplane, so it must have been one of those barnstormers that made a lot of noise and that sort of thing. And then I sat there, and I looked at all the things that either had been created or improved on in her lifetime, the telephone, the television, the microwave, the airplane, et cetera, and named all those things off. I said, "You've seen a lot in your 85 years." And she said, "I ain't seen nothing compared to what you're going to see."
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, in just 20 years, you got the world in your pocket with a cell phone.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about the technology just advancing so much, so writing science fiction might not be the thing. But the thing with being a writer and writing science fiction is you can set it so far into the future that, you know, your people, your characters, your world can be anything you want it to be. So it doesn't necessarily have to be based on technology today or in where it's going. It's, you can advance it being a writer. I think of the writer Roddenberry for Star Trek. I mean, look at the stuff that he wrote about on that show that kind of come to pass in the real world we're living
mm-hmm.
now. You know, none of that stuff was around back in the 60s when he was writing that show.
I have had a little bit of a tendency to predict things, like I predicted like 30 years ago that the time would come when you wouldn't turn the TV on at 8 o'clock on Tuesday night to catch your program. You would be able to just go in and watch your program anytime that you wanted and have that program direct to your TV. Well,
streaming,
we're there.
There you go.
Yep. We're there.
Yeah.
So
there was somebody just shared this. I've seen it a couple of times now. They shared it on Instagram. It was an article from the 1960s, like 1963, I believe it was. And this woman had this little small, what was basically a cellular phone. And this was pocket size, and she was saying back in 1963 that she worked at Bell Labs, but this, you know, was a prototype. She said, in the future, this is what people are going to have. It's going to be in their pockets, and they can take it with them wherever they go. And back then, people were like, yeah, okay, sure. But this is 1963, and yeah, I mean, that's where we're at now.
It's like the flying cars,
mm-hmm.
see? It came to pass.
Yeah, they fly over my
mm-hmm.
house all the time.
All the time.
I just hate when they open the window and throw stuff out.
I think we're a bit overdue for a commercial. We've got a long one queued up.
Yeah. So speaking of series, this is the Mac McDowell series. If it encourages you to write a series, Carlisle, just take a listen to this.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Williscroft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deep water espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay SOSUS arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska, where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? In Operation Whiteout, Mac McDowell's Tuthis tangles with Argentine subs in the South Atlantic, then confronts a Chi-Com sub off Thurston Island. Escorting a Taiwanese sub, Tuthis is attacked by a Chinese Han-class sub and a North Korean AIP sub. Will Mac complete his mission, or will he meet his watery grave on the Pacific's abyssal plain? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Willis-Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Boy, we had two or three more books to that commercial, and we can just release the commercial as an audiobook.
Or a full-length movie.
Yeah.
Right. So, over here on Twitter, Robert G. Willis-Croft, speaking of Robert G. Willis-Croft and Mac McDowell, he's got a question for you. He wants to know, are you still evangelically religious?
No, what I can say about that, there were, when I was a kid, there was a line in the Bible that said, narrow is the way and few there be that enter therein. And I came to understand that to mean to me that there are members of every religion who get it. And there are, but most don't. My grandmother and my Aunt Estel were two people who got it. They were deeply fundamentalists, but they were loving and kind and caring and excluded no one. They would not ever have denied someone to be who or what they are. And they were fundamentalists. And so there are people who are in fundamentalist religions who come to a spiritual understanding that other people don't. I've said before that the more ego is involved in any religion, the less it ceases to be about spirituality and about God, and the more it becomes about power and manipulation and that kind of thing. Religion is a tool to develop spirituality, and just like a hammer is a tool, you can use a hammer to construct a house, or you can use it as a murder weapon. How you use the tool of religion depends upon the people who are using it, either using it, as a group together, or using it individually. And so I am a Christian. I remain a Christian. However, I take truth from wherever I find it. And if that truth comes from Muslim tradition, if it comes from Buddhist tradition, or wherever it comes from, what I find is that I was able to take those pieces as I grew up, and all of those times that I was in Bible study and those kinds of things, I was able to take that and come to an awareness of Christianity that is different from many mainstream Christian churches. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, he also, referring back to your books being kind of interconnected with characters carrying over from the previous one, he says, sounds like a series to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Earlier, I thought you said theory, and I thought, what theory? Theory writing.
Theory.
It is a kind of a series, but it's, yeah, it's not like most series that I've known of.
That was a Beatles song, wasn't it? Theory writer.
Well, being interconnected like that, you got one character carrying over. It's kind of an interesting, idea, an interesting concept, I think, having that one character, maybe having that character being the first person point of view in one book, and then in the next book, somebody else is that first person point of view. So you see that same character through different eyes. You know, that's kind mm-hmm. of a neat idea there.
Yeah. Like I said, each character, the soul changing event is in each novel. But you get how you see it versus how they saw it. And, people have an interaction and we interpret from our own belief system, you know, what that interaction meant to us. And then the other person interprets from their belief system what that interaction meant.
Oh,
boy, if we only had a commercial for the Calling Dream that we could play, that would really, really sum things up a lot.
Yeah, here we go. This one is The Calling Dream by Carl Towns.
In 1945, 10-year-old Ronald Dennison, the son of a backwoods Arkansas preacher, began having profound dreams about religion and a strange red-haired woman. The dreams follow him for decades, with the woman sometimes seducing him, other times calling him to become a televangelist, but eventually berating him for his sins of lust. She holds a secret so dark that he dares never admit it, even to himself. The more famous and wealthier he becomes, the more he struggles with his adultery, his fetish, and his shame, until his torment can no longer be contained. Staggering revelations challenge everything he ever believed. Will truth bring him the peace he always craved? Or will the woman's demands prove more than he can bear? Read the novel, The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms. Proudly published by Fresh Ink Group in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats. The Calling Dream by Carlisle Toms.
Available now. Go get a copy. All right.
Boy, I'm looking over on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
It's in the Fresh Ink Group channel. It's in Carlisle Toms' channel. And of course, he's got a subtitle edition out here as well, too. So get out there and check all of these versions, people, over on YouTube.
And
when you get to the Fresh Ink Group channel, make sure you subscribe, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go over there and look at the numbers, because we were same number. Come on, people. We need 3 more subscribers to hit a milestone. Let's get that done.
So, Carlisle, you've talked about you're well into writing the next novel. What can we expect from that, and when can we expect to see that?
I don't know in terms of that one. What I'm doing right now is revising the first novel, and then that one will be published next.
Okay.
But I'm revising that and getting that prepared, and then there is sort of my own autobiography that's told in poetry and prose. And I'm revising that. But the third novel, the transgender child is the protagonist of that. And in what happens is that Ronald Dennison is asked, you know, this kid watches your show on TV and this kid thinks that he's a girl, and can you convince him that he's not really a girl and get him to straighten up? And so the preacher goes to try to get him straightened up, and this kid who was raised in the slums of Pruitt-Igoe in the 1970s, and well, it's around 71 when he's 10 years old, around 1971, 11 years old. And at 10 years old, walked in to find his mother stabbed to death. His mother was a heroin addict in the slums of Pruitt-Igoe. Actually, her mother was a heroin addict. And so goes by Stephen, becomes Stephanie. And this is Stephanie's story of finding her mother stabbed to death, of being placed in foster care, being removed from the only person that she knew who had her back, who really cared about her and took care of her, which was an old woman who lived up the hall. And so Stephanie, then this becomes her journey, that whole process of maturing. Actually, she will mature around the time of the onset of the AIDS crisis in the 1980s.
All right. Now, what's your writing process like? Do you set aside a certain time during the day where you go in and write? Do you write when it hits? Do you have a secret place that you go and a special place that you go to write? How does this come about?
I wish I had a secret place, a special place to go and write, but I don't have that at this point. I share my office with the cats and the cat room where we keep the litter boxes, and it's just up the hall from the living room where my husband watches TV and likes to listen to music, and sometimes I put earplugs in so that I can tune other things out and concentrate on the writing. I don't have a specific time or where I go and just work on it. So far it has been, and part of this is due to having, you know, worked 40-hour week job and very often working overtime, that I would just get to it when I could get to it. And since I've retired, I'm still kind of doing that get to it when I can get to it, because I'm trying to promote some other things, get the website revised, and my sister is helping me on revising the website. She's doing a great job on website design. And so I'm kind of doing that. And I think one of the things I probably need to do, what I used to do, is set aside Sunday for a writing day. And I think I need probably set aside 2 or 3 days a week for writing days, at least, if not more, and then work on the other stuff another time, you know, divide it up.
So what I'm hearing is you need, like, quiet when you're writing. You're not one of these writers who, you know, crank up the music, or you can just write, you know, with the
right.
Noises.
I
need silence. I need quiet.
Yeah, yeah. If the music is going on, especially if it's vocal music, my mind wants to sing along.
Sing along, yeah.
and I cannot sing along and concentrate on my writing at the same time. So, yeah, I need a quiet place, and hopefully that'll be something when we move, that I can be able to have a place that's set aside for my office to, I can just go to and close everything out and write.
Mm, that'd be nice.
We're not there yet. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I get it done.
So this is your first book with Fresh Ink Group. And, you know, you were self-publishing before and then made the switch over. Are you happy so far? Is this going to work out?
Yes, I'm very, very happy with it. You guys did a great job with the trailer. You know, you've done a great, you know, it's available in hardcover, which it wasn't before. You know, you've done a great job of promoting it. I'm very, very happy with Fresh Ink. Yes.
Well, we like hearing that, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, and several other people have commented about the quality of the trailer, including people that I know on Stage 32 who are film industry professionals.
Ooh.
Who have commented that the trailer was good.
All right. Just remind them the budget was the budget was $60. And every
and that's a low budget.
And you believe it or not, those are stock footage people in there, and they still wanted their own trailers. When do stock footage people get their own trailers?
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm over here looking at YouTube. It's got 138 views so far, and it's a new video, so it's already getting some attention. We appreciate you people out there who make it a point to watch these videos and hit that thumbs up too and share it and you know, put money in an envelope and send it to me, whatever it is that moves you.
Yeah, Robert G. Williscroft says he's got a little advice. He says, spray Nature's Miracle in the litter boxes daily for no odors. So there's the commercial.
Nature's Miracle.
Do you know what I actually do is I mix peppermint oil with Febreze, and I don't spray it in the litter boxes, but I spray it around the litter boxes, and I spray it in the sifter and that kind of thing. Hmm. So I love my cats. I adore my cats, and they're going to stay.
Hmm. How many cats do you have?
And they don't bother me too much. Well, at this point, eight.
Eight? Holy cow,
eight.
I do like cats.
Yeah. Well, the eighth one was a little kitten that was a stray that showed up at the house, and that's also a long story about bringing him in. But, you know, cats have a tendency to find you. If they know you like cats, they'll find you.
Yeah. So have you had some interactions with fans so far? Any feedback from people about any of your work that's particularly poignant that you really enjoyed?
Well, yeah, I mean, there have been, even on the previous edition of it, which this is a much better edition, you know, there were people who made some good comments on Amazon, and you know, so various different people who've done that, and then you know, there are people, like I said, who commented that the one person commented on the trailer that it was intriguing.
Yeah,
so,
I saw
that.
There is
some positive energy. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was Verwayne, I'm thinking. Verwayne Greenhall, he's one of our regular listeners. I saw his comment saying that he, you know, just looking at the trailer, he became intrigued about the book. So, hey, that's the trailer that does its job.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Carlisle, what sort of advice would you give to young up-and-coming authors? What would you tell them about the writing business?
Oh my God. The writing is the easy part, and that's not easy.
I like that.
You know, the hard part is getting it out there, getting it marketed, and that kind of thing. And you know, it can take a very, very long time to finish a novel and polish a novel, and you know, I think it requires a great deal of patience and tenacity.
I agree. Definitely. Yeah.
So, Carlisle Toms, how do people find you? Do they want to send you a note or follow you, find you on social media?
Well, they can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on LinkedIn.
What are your handles? How do they find you?
How do they find me? It's at Carlisle_Toms.
Okay.
KARLYLE_TOMMS. Or my website is CarlisleToms.com.
CarlisleToms.com. That's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
All right.
You just have to remember to spell it with a K.
Yep. Well, it's been great having you on the show, Carlisle. We've had you on once before, and we look forward to having you again, especially when your next book is ready to go. But we wish you the best of luck with The Calling Dream. So far, the feedback and reaction has been excellent, and we're looking forward to this being a hit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Me too.
All right. So we got some shows coming up, Beam.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, I don't even have them all written down on the sheet here because we did some last-minute shuffling here.
Yeah.
But I know we've got Cheryl Carpinello, who's a member of the Colorado Authors League.
Well, next week we've got Joan Hall, one of our Story Empire authors. She's going to next week was supposed to be Andrea A.K. Wengler, and I believe, what was it, like a knee surgery or something she had? She wasn't able to do it. But Joan Hall, she's going to be a return visit. She's got a brand new book coming out. So
Menagerie.
Tune in for that. And then the week following that, we've got Karen Ingalls coming in. And her book, Outshined, is out right now, the second edition. So get over there and grab a hold of it. And the week after that, we have one of our fan favorites, Verwayne Greenhill. He's coming in. He's talking about the Vela experience and the AI chat stuff where you can use AI for writing stories. And he's got some interesting things to talk about. And then after that, we've got an open week, so we're going to be looking to fill that one. But then we have Cheryl Carpinello, as Stephen just mentioned. So tune in for that. That's the 29th of March.
Jody's right after her.
And Jody Bowersox is right after that. And that's the first week of April. And we will be having plenty more guests added to the schedule in the coming weeks. So keep your ears open for that. And if you're not subscribed to our newsletter, get over there to freshinggroup.com and subscribe to that newsletter, because you'll get all of this stuff in advance and you'll know who's doing what and where and how they're doing it and why you should be doing it too.
All right. So we've got another commercial to play on the way out. Thanks again to everybody for tuning in. Thanks to our caller. Thanks for participating on Twitter, and especially thanks to Carlisle Toms for stopping by, bringing the snacks, and having a nice chat with us.
Yes. Thank you, Carlisle. And
all right.
Thank you very much. Yes.
We'll see everybody next week.
See ya. Bye.
Hi, I'm Mary Margaret Fanson. My grandmother, Big Mama, calls me Sassy. I've been a member of the African Methodist Episcopal Church all my life. I never knew why everyone was so proud to be AME. Then I met Gerald in Children's Church. He thinks he knows everything about being AME. I have to learn a lot more just to show him. B.A. Johnson has been writing a series of books about me, my brother, and my friends, with lots of colorful drawings. We also explore bullying, friendship, inclusion, death, grief, forgiveness, and more. Sassy Discovers the AME Church is about me learning about our church and something terrible that happened in Charleston. The second book, Sassy Uncovers Peter Allen's Secret, is about discovering the story of our church's founder's family, and one hero in particular. These and more Sassy books are published by Fresh Ink Group in laminated hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats available worldwide. Come on, join me and discover why I can say I'm proud to be AME.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.